Hey everyone, this is Andy.
And this is Sam.
And we're the Spiteries. We started the Spiteries review series as a small Patreon side project, but it turns out that my wife is even better at podcasting than I am, so we're bringing the Spiteries review to the masses.
Starting this month, the Spiteries review will be available wherever you get your podcasts, so come and listen as Andy and I chat about the stuff we've watched and the things that we've done.
With brand new episodes every month, the Spiteries review is a peek into what life is like in the Spiteri household, and you never know when Linker Zora will make a surprise appearance.
We've even got older shows in the vault that will be rolled out over the next few months, including reviews on Mean Girls, Twilight, Spirited Away, Cowboy Bebop, and more. So make sure you subscribe wherever you get your podcasts.
Like they say, happy wife equals happy life.
Ugh, you're so lame.
So help us out by joining our Discord and subscribing wherever you get your podcasts. The Spiteries review is available now from SPNet. Hello everyone and welcome to the ZeldaCast here on ZeldaDungeon.net. My name is Andy Spiteri and I'm flying solo right now. And the reason for that is because we do not have a new episode this week. As I mentioned at the tail end of last week's show, we are just going to be taking this week off. Allison is, she's enjoying some vacation time over with some fellow Zelda Dungeon people over in California. And I was just like, okay, well, you know, a week off sounds cool. However, instead of leaving everybody just high and dry, we have got an unlock for you. The very first Patreon episode that we ever did for our new ZeldaCast Patreon. It's a series called The Top Tens. And this episode, we were still kind of figuring out exactly how we wanted the formatting to go and everything like that. So there's a few hiccups there, but it was a really fun classic Al and Andy joint that we were very proud of. And we thought that enough time had passed that we would just unlock that and release it to everyone to enjoy. So this particular episode is focusing on the most emotional moments on the Zelda series. So if you need tissue, get that ready, because there's a lot of heavy hitters in there, as well as a little bit of levity to end it off with the ugliest Twilight Princess characters. So enjoy. that's going to do it for this week's show. So please stick around and enjoy. And of course, we will be back next week in full regular time, regular everything, so make sure that you are checking us out there. Just wanted to, first and foremost, thank everybody that checked out this episode on Patreon originally when it first launched about 10 months ago, give or take. And just let everybody know as well that, you know, if you dig this episode, there is a bunch of other episodes over on the Patreon channel as well. The link that you'll want to check out is patreon.com/SPNet. And, there's tons of other stuff there too. There's not only the ZeldaCast Top 10s, but we've got episodes for the Zelda animated show. So there's an episode for every single episode of that series. So 13 episodes right there. Plus, there's some Metroid stuff there if you're a Metroid fan. Plus, there's some movie stuff there if you're a movie fan. Plus, there's some music stuff there if you're a music fan. Plus, there's the first couple episodes of the Spiteries review, which me and my wife Samantha did, and that was honestly a absolute blast. So, long story short, if you're itching for some more Zelda content, check out patreon.com/SPNet. Otherwise, like I said, we are going to leave you with this unlock, but we'll be back in the new swing of things next week, and we're rapidly approaching the one-year anniversary of Tears of the Kingdom. So lots of stuff coming up about that particular anniversary. Everybody have a spectacular week, and we will see you back here next week. Until then, everybody, take care. Hello everyone and welcome to the ZeldaCast Top 10s! This is a new bonus series that we are starting over on patreon.com/SPNet. So just want to thank everybody who is listening to this for being here and checking out the ZeldaCast over on Patreon and supporting the show. It means a lot. This is going to be a fun show. This is going to be a show where Each month, we are going to have a different topic, and I think we're going to do 2 top 10s per month. But what we're going to do, we're going to have a different topic every month, and we're going to have a different guest every month, and we could not do this show in properly without our first guest being the one, the only, the legend herself, co-host of the ZeldaCast, Allison Aletha. What's up, Al? How are you?
I'm doing good. We just got off of recording an episode of the ZeldaCast together, as we do every week. So this is fun that we get to talk about. We do a lot of rankings, but not like top 10 overarching things from the series. So I'm excited.
We do a lot of definitive stuff. I mean, it's not like we don't do rankings and stuff like that. But when I was kind of picturing my idea for what I wanted this show to be, I didn't want to come up with like different topics and stuff like that. Like, I wanted like one consistent thing that we could look at and be like, okay, this is kind of what we're doing, and like work around. Like, for example, like with the Great Metroid Area ranking, which is also available on Patreon, is like, okay, like we have one kind of central idea. Now we just got to fill in the pieces to see what we're talking about. And I think that this is going to be like just kind of fun, because what a top 10 list really is, it's an excuse to talk about a bunch of different moments that have some common threads, in common. So I'm excited to get going on this new series, and I'm pretty stoked about our topics today. I think we're going to go from like one end of the spectrum to the other, where we're talking about some stuff that just tugs at your heartstrings, and then we're going to stuff that just tugs at your eyeballs instead. So so we have 2 top 10 lists, and this was your nomination, the top 10 most emotional moments in the series. Now let me ask you a question, Al. My interpretation of this list was like, aka top 10 saddest moments in the series. Is that the same for you?
It's close enough, because it was more so for me coming off of Tears of the Kingdom, and I felt like there were 2 really big moments where I was like, I wouldn't say sad, but just like extremely moved and had like a lot of emotional feelings connected to it. So I wanted to talk about how I felt that way for other Zelda games as well.
Right. So yeah, my list is basically like, it's all sad stuff.
I have a lot of sad stuff too, so it's not far off there.
We almost could have called this list the sad. Like, eventually we should do like another list, Al, where it's just like,
it's like the happiest
top 10 moments that make you fist pump in the Zelda series, because there's a lot of those moments.
Ooh, there's a good one in Tears where I was like, and that was a great moment. I would love to talk about that someday.
Yeah, that's okay. We're booking a future ZeldaCast top 10s where we talk about that. But I think that we should just get right into the action here, because we have a lot to go over on these lists, by God. And talk about our top 10 emotional moments in the series. And Al, you are my guest on this fine long weekend, so I would love if you would kick off the very first ranking on the very first show of the ZeldaCast top 10s. It's all you. Take it away. What is your number 10 most emotional moment in the series?
That's like so much pressure considering what I have listed, but I again, this is also subjective, so this is emotional to me personally.
Oh, so, okay, sorry. One more qualifier here. One more qualifier. I didn't mean to cut you off right there. So we did rank our list. So maybe what we can do, because I imagine we're going to have some crossover.
Some similarities, yeah.
So maybe what we can do is kind of play it by ear. And if you're talking about something at number 9 that's on my list at like number 1 or 2, maybe I'll just say like, let's hold off and let's go on to our next thing, and vice versa. If I'm about to list something that's really high on your list, maybe just say like, okay, hold on there, cowboy. And we'll get to it when we get to number 2 or number 3 on my list there. Just to save that for, because usually when we do top 10s and stuff like that, we kind of pool our list together and make it so that we don't talk about the same thing twice. Yeah.
Yes.
So I think that we should do that same kind of thing for here. What say you?
I think that's good. I would say that we're going to have quite a few that are similar, but maybe this one not so much. I don't know. I don't know how this one made me feel, but my first game was A Link to the Past, but the first real Zelda game that I like fully engulfed myself in was Ocarina of Time. And there's a moment where I feel like it really sets me off for my adventure in the Zelda series. And that is when Saria is giving Link the ocarina when he's leaving Kakariko, or not Kakariko, the Kokiri Forest.
Right.
And I feel like It's like her saying goodbye to a friend, and Link is like hesitant to leave his friend, but is also ready to set out on his adventure and save Hyrule. And I felt very connected to that moment where I was like, I'm ready to let go of this life where I wasn't really playing video games or playing these like big fantasy adventures. And I was ready to take that ocarina and go on my adventure. And I felt like kind of connected to it. I did it with my brothers as well. So we were all like, oh, that's really sad. And so I do have a little bit of an emotional connection to that moment.
I think so too. I have a moment with Syria on my list. It's different enough that I think that we can talk about it again later.
Okay.
This is a good moment because it's like the look on Link's face kind of sells it to me, which sounds ridiculous because I mean we're talking about like a super old game here, but like the look on his face, like you can tell he just doesn't quite know what to say, and he slowly walks away without saying anything, and it's just like. Mm-hmm. It's very moving, and it's very sad, and it is like it's triumphant in a way because you're about to embark on this just amazing grand adventure, but like also at the same time, mm-hmm. it's you're leaving everything that you knew and you like your entire world behind. So like it is sad, like it's emotional, like it's emotional. I don't know if I'd say it's sad. It's a lot of different things. So like yeah, this is a strong choice to start us off. Okay, well I guess it's my turn. So I picked kind of a weird moment, I think, for my 10th entry on this list. But it always has stuck out to me, and I empathize with this. So mine is from Skyward Sword. Okay. And throughout the entire duration of the game, everything Ghirahim has done has been for the Return of Demise. Every atrocity he's done, every bad thing, he just wants to get his master back. And eventually at the end, after many battles, many hardships, many heartbreaks, which we'll talk about, Demise returns. And Demise doesn't even look at Ghirahim. He doesn't mm-hmm. care about him at all. He's just like, you brought me back. That was your job. Now get in my sword. And like, the way he throws Ghirahim aside, just like a piece of trash, just, mm-hmm. it gets me, which like maybe it shouldn't, because Ghirahim is obviously a top tier villain and he's doing villainous stuff. But it's like, my heart breaks for Ghirahim, like when Demise comes back and he just like doesn't even acknowledge him at all. It's super sad, I feel like, in a weird way. And I'm empathizing with someone who it seems strange that you would empathize with.
Mm-hmm. No, I agree. That's a good moment because there's like this split second where there's a look on Ghirahim's face when Demise literally kind of casts him aside. And there's this like slight moment where you could feel like he is jilted by that. But at the same time, I feel like that moment for him goes away pretty quickly because he did do his what he exists to do. So I'm sure that was fulfilling to him, but you could tell that that did for a split second hurt, and like, which is weird. You don't want to feel empathy for somebody like Ghirahim, who is clearly evil, you know, and has an evil purpose. So I think that's why it hits so hard, is because you do see a moment where there is emotion there for just a split second. So that's a good moment to pick. I didn't think of that one.
It was one of the first ones I thought of, actually. It's funny. Okay. Maybe it should have been higher on my list, but there you go. Okay, let's get it started here. Number 9, okay. Al, what do you got?
Okay, this is a very, very, very really quick moment, but I feel like it has a lot of buildup and a lot of implications to it. And I have, this is when I finished Ocarina of Time with my brothers, I then played Majora's Mask, and Majora's Mask has a ton of emotional stuff in it, but there's something that just kind of hit me really hard, and it's during the credits when the butler finds his son dead in the Lost Woods. And it's like, the reason I think it's even more sad is because if you beat the game, you can tell that you've helped everybody. The credits go through everybody that you've helped, show how they are enjoying the festivities of the festival. I can't talk today. The moon didn't crush everything and destroy the world. Everybody's happy. But at the end, you see the butler, like, grieving over his lost son. And I feel like that, like, really hit hard because everybody's supposed to be, like, relieved that they didn't die, you know. Yeah. But the butler, he didn't wind up like that. So it's like a really, like, it kind of hits you really hard because you're able to help everybody else go through their grief in this game, but not the butler.
It's funny. It's funny that you have that one at number nine, because at number nine on my list, I have Macau, who obviously is the Zora equivalent of that. And yeah, like I, honestly, like any one of those three would have been appropriate for this list, and mm-hmm. and any one of those three, or maybe even all of them, I don't know, could have been on this list. But yeah, there's just with the butler and that kid specifically, I felt so sad. But I didn't include that one because there's another one that I want to talk about that's similar. But yeah, just seeing that moment in that tree, and that one's kind of one where like you see the tree at the beginning of the game and it doesn't mean anything to you, mm-hmm. and then like later when you kind of piece together what it is, it's quite sad. But mm-hmm. I like to me, like just seeing Macau wash up on that beach and like seeing him pass away, and just, you know, he's poor guy who's about to be a father, and you know, Lulu has what is it, six or seven little Zora egg babies, six I guess, because mm-hmm. it makes the ocarina notes, very sad. And like it seems like, you know, it just seems like it's a waste, because like if Link could have only just got there a little bit quicker or like something, he could have saved him maybe. But yeah, it's a very sad moment seeing him wash up on that beach, and there's nothing really you can do except send him along. So yeah, okay, we were on the same page there for this one. What do we got over at number eight?
I'm gonna put some more Majora's Mask. And you know what's funny is I almost added Darmani to my list, because I feel like the way you help Darmani heal and move on is also very sad. But he didn't quite make it. But I added Andrew and Cafe to my list because they have a better outcome, but there's still like so much emotion and so many parts, moving parts to play, and characters who are invested in these two, that I feel like the overarching story is very emotional, especially when the outcome is great, you know?
Yeah.
So Andrew is like, doesn't understand what's happening, why Cafe left. She's still holding on the hope that he's, you know, going to be there for her and show up for the wedding. And she's even willing to like stay in town and wait for him. And he's willing to, you know, he was cursed and turned into a child, but he's willing to risk everything to get his wedding gift for her and make it up to her, despite being turned into something that probably she doesn't want anymore. So he fears that, and Andrew fears that he's gone, and there's just so much emotion. Cafe's mother gets involved, and Cafe's friend is involved, and there's just like so many characters that have so much to do with this that it's like there's so much emotion going on. And when they come together at the end, they decide to stay together even if the moon crushes them, and I feel like that's like a very big testament of their love. And then in the credits you see that they're fine and they actually do in fact get married. So
yeah,
there's a lot of emotion in that whole entire side quest that spans the entire game of Majora's Mask.
Simply the best side quest in Zelda, like still to this day. Yeah, I mean, we've talked about that, you know, we've talked about that quest before. It's a fantastic quest. It is like a emotional moment, and I think the only reason I didn't include them on my list is because like there's a happy ending, and I'm you know, I think the only thing I got on here is like sad tales,
sad stuff.
Yeah, so they did have a happy ending, but definitely like it by the letter of the law, like what an emotional moment, like, and not even a moment, just like an emotional like quest from start to finish. Okay, well I've got I don't know if this is a deep cut or not, but I forgot about this, and then I was doing like a quick go through, and then game by game, and then I was I kind of had my list done, and then I was like, okay, well, there's not much story that happens in the first couple Zelda games, but I better go back and just double check. And like when I was going through and just reading up on A Link to the Past again, I read up on something that I completely forgot about, and so number eight on my list is Flute Boy, and Flute Boy is you kind of see these, like there's a place in the woods where there's all of these animals, and like they're all gathering around this tree stump, and there's this apparition, let's just say, like this ghost of a guy, of this boy playing a flute. And when you go into the dark world, he's this like kind of weird rabbit looking thing, which actually, funny enough, I associate with our pal Mossy's, because that's his avatar on a lot of different things. So you see this kind of like weird rabbit thing, and then you've got to find his flute and then play it, and then once you do that, he turns into a little tree, much like the one in Majora's Mask. But what really kind of is the kicker for me on this one as well, and why I decided to include this one over the Majora's Mask one, is you do end up having to go and find Flute Boy's father, and you give him the flute, and he's just like, oh my, he knows exactly what it means, he knows exactly what's happened, and he's just like, no, keep the flute, like, just, you know, it's yours. So it's very sad in a game that I think A Link to the Past can be a little bit stiff sometimes, so to see a moment like that is... it's pretty touching, I think.
I don't remember that at all. So interesting. Like, I kind of agree with you. I don't think of a lot of A Link to the Past moments, aside from maybe Link's uncle in the beginning, where he, you know, takes off and he's like, hey, I need to go do something and help the princess, so I'll be back later. And then you find him in, like, the sewer, and it's, like, sad. So I thought that's what you were going to talk about, but I don't remember the implications of this. But yeah, the what you just described does sound like, oh, that's...
It's pretty much like the same thing in Majora's Mask, just in a game that,
yeah,
it maybe stands out a little bit more, I think, or mm-hmm. at least it does to me, just because, like, I mean, you could almost do a top 10 list of Majora's Mask by itself.
Oh, by itself, yes. Yeah. I struggled with not putting, like, everything that I have emotional connections to in Majora's Mask on my list.
Yeah, exactly. So, yeah, there it is. Okay, number 7. What do we got?
Okay, I have a lot of, like, Zelda-related things, like, not overarching, but Zelda as the character. So my next one is going to be Zelda's Sacrifice in Twilight Princess.
Really?
There's... Oh, come on. Aww. There's some moments in Twilight... I had two moments in Twilight Princess where I was like, ooh, I feel like...
This is a spoiler, but I have zero from...
there's a moment where she kind of gives her enemy almost, like, I know Midna isn't, like, 100% her enemy, but, like, considering the past between the Twilight and the Hyrule, like, it kind of feels like Zelda sacrifices her own life knowing that Midna can do what she can't. And so Midna is here dying, laying here dying, and Zelda essentially gives her her life force, her light, to help Midna heal and revive, because she knows that Midna is what's going to save Hyrule. And I feel like, especially when Midna is reaching out saying, Link, stop her, or whatever you name your character, like, stop her. She, like, Midna knows what's about to happen, and Zelda does it anyways. And I feel like that's a really powerful moment as a, you know, a person in Zelda's position. Like, first of all, she had to sacrifice her Hyrule to Zan because she knew she couldn't beat him. And that's a big, like, decision that she has to make as a royal, but then she also did the same, like, she did it over again, but giving her trust into almost her enemy. So I thought that was, like, a really important moment, especially, like, when I talk about another moment later.
I mean, yeah, okay, I see what you're saying. I think it doesn't click with me, well, for a few reasons. I'm not really big on Twilight Princess Zelda. I think she's just kind of cold, and, like, she has a bunch of shots where she looks really cool, but it's like, I don't know. She doesn't click to me. She doesn't feel as fleshed out as some of the other Princess Zeldas. I think, like, that moment with Midna's just kind of, like, I don't know, unearned a little bit. And then, like, the kicker here is, of course, at the end, which is my same problem with Tears of the Kingdom, which is where I imagine you're going, but it's just, like, nothing happens. Like, she just comes back, and it feels like if there is some weight behind it, I think it would feel less cheap to me.
Mm-hmm. I will talk about that later with Tears of the Kingdom, where it does feel like you kind of take away the weight of Zelda's sacrifice, but yeah. There's a moment that I think makes it fine. Like, it makes it okay that they did that. Whereas in Twilight Princess, I feel a little less like, if Zelda really sacrificed herself knowing that Midna could save Hyrule, I wish it kind of stayed that way.
Yeah. Okay, well, here's another spoiler. I don't have any Tears of the Kingdom on my list.
Really?
Nope.
Okay, there's stuff that actually made me tear up, so I
really? Okay. Yeah. Okay, number 7. I feel like this might be on your list, so stop me if it is.
Okay.
The ending of Link's Awakening.
I actually didn't put that on my list, but I suspected that you would put it on yours.
Yeah, I mean, it's just... It's such a surreal... Specifically, like, I was going to put the scene with Marin and Link on the beach, just because, like, It is a very emotional scene, but I think what sells that is the ending of the game. So, like, in retrospect, that scene means a lot more, but you don't get that without the ending where, you know, you of course have to wake up the Windfish, which causes everything to disappear. So, like, all these characters, these wacky characters live in Animal Village, and Marin and Taryn and Prince, whatever his face is over in the castle. Just like all these friends that you've made that don't actually exist, but, you know, feels like they do disappear. And I think kind of what sells it, and like, this is a moment that the game has been building up to for a long time, but like all of the dungeon bosses are just like, they're begging you not to wake the Windfish. And it's such a great moment, because it's like one of those things that you, like, you have to do, but you don't want to do. And, mm-hmm. and so I think it's encapsulated perfectly with Marin when you see her at the end of the game with the seagull flying, where it's like, was this a dream? Was it not? It's a great moment. It's very bittersweet. It always reminds me of kind of like a phrase that I heard called mono no aware, which is like when you're happy about something, but you know that it can't last. And so it's mm-hmm. like a bittersweet feeling. It's a very heavy moment, I feel like. And it's only lower on my list because I don't know that there's like one moment specifically, but like if it were talking about like heavy arcs or like a heavy, or emotional, just like things in general, like this is definitely ranked towards the top. But yeah, Marin, Link's Awakening. Very sad.
Yep. It is very sad. It always makes me think of, especially in storylines in movies and books where there's time travel involved. I know there isn't really time travel involved in Link's Awakening, but where some, you know, that you could do something different to have a different yeah. outcome, maybe save somebody, and then therefore you save somebody that you care about. But it always winds up not being for the best, because if you change this outlook, a lot of other things that are good no longer happen, and then yeah. a lot of hurt follows. And I feel like that's kind of the same, where you don't want to wake up the Windfish because you don't want to lose Marin and the others. But I mean, of course, in this game you have to, but like the choice is ultimately, I know that I'm not in the real world and I have to get yeah. out of here and do my job, you know, in order for the better of like Hyrule or wherever Link is going next. But so yeah, it's kind of like the same decision. Like, I really don't want to lose these people I care about, but I have to for the betterment of everything else. So,
and one thing I'll say too, to echo what you just kind of mentioned previously with your Zelda, I guess not echo, but like the opposite of echo. I don't know. But one thing, like, this one has consequences. Like, this is actually, yeah. like, it matters. It stays that way. There's no, like, yeah. there's no thing at the end where Marin just, like, appears in the real world and she's like, hey, Link, good dream you had.
You know what? That's a good point, because they do that in Phantom Hourglass where you beat Bellum and you yes. find out that the whole world was fake, but you see Limebeck at the end. So you're like, yay, Limebeck, you know? So I get that. I wish there was a little bit of emotional weight, and maybe it's because these games are really not geared towards that sort of like storytelling. So yeah. it's like Nintendo and you have to have a happy ending, you know what I mean? But this was the moment where you kind of didn't.
Yeah, exactly. So okay, yeah. number 6. What do we got?
Okay, so there's a lot of there's clearly a theme going on with some of these, and I just have to pick the one that I think I felt least with to go lower on my list. So I think I'm gonna go with King Daphne's at the end of Wind Waker.
Okay.
And like, I feel like there's definitely a theme where it's a companion, kind of your companion leaves you theme going on my list. But we'll start with King Daphne's. Like, he's your king of Red Lions the whole time, and he's helping you on this adventure. He's traversing the world, the ocean with you, and you know, Tetra's involved, Link's involved. King of Red Lions figures out that this kid he's basically been using to get his own and is the hero, and he grows close to him, and it's great. But then you get to the end and you realize that in defeating Ganondorf, you are sinking old Hyrule and the king. And he's willing to make that sacrifice. He knows that Tetra and Link are the future of Hyrule, and he knows that he has satiated the old gods that flooded his land, and he did his job, and he's willing to sink with the ship, so to say, to let Link and Tetra go on and let Hyrule survive, you know, and flourish and grow again, once again. So it's like a really, like, it's like a really kind of like sad moment. Because usually when your companions leave, they just leave and kind of go off on their own lives and do their own thing. But in this moment, you're kind of like leaving him there to die. And it's just God. and the music ties in so well. And then there's the moment where Link is encased in a bubble and he's starting to float up to the top and he's reaching for the king. And he's like, he's trying to swim to him and get him to come up with him. And he can't accomplish it. And you go up and the king sinks. And it's just, oh God, it really gets me every time. So.
Yeah. Okay. You know what? Spoiler. I have no Wind Waker on my list either. and it's not because, like, there's a lot of great moments in that game. Like, I was considering, like, putting on, I think everyone's waiting for one of us to say, like, when you wave goodbye to grandma. And I was almost considering putting that on my list because it is sad. But I ended up not going that way. Wind Waker, this is a good scene. I don't know that I ever felt, like, close enough to the King of Red Lions to have it rank on my list. Mm-hmm. Which, like, I like the King of Red, like, I think he's a fine companion. I think he's a good companion, and I like the story, and I like that ending. So, yeah, it didn't quite hit on my list, but it is a great moment. I think, like, that entire ending sequence of Wind Waker is actually fantastic with, like,
it's great. Mm-hmm.
The battle of Ganondorf, and with, like, oh, you know, it'd be like talk about a fist pump moment when he puts his hand on the Triforce instead of Ganondorf. You're just like, yes,
yeah.
Yes.
Yes, it was great.
Go to hell, yeah. Ganondorf. Yeah, yeah. So, okay. Well, he doesn't get on my top 10 most emotional list, but maybe he gets on my fist pump list. Okay. Number 6 for me was from Breath of the Wild, actually, and it's a quiet memory of Mipha and Link just chatting atop of
Ruta.
I was about to say Naboris. Varuta. Yes, thank you. It's just a. Just a sweet scene, and mm-hmm. like Mipha's talking about she made this armor for Link and like this, I can't even remember specifically what they chat about. It's just kind of like they're just chatting about like life and like there's this big moment that's about to happen that we know is going to separate them. So it's kind of like one of those moments of like what could have been or what, you know. It's just a sweet scene.
It's definitely a what could have been, because if I remember right, she's like, remember when you were a child and you were so reckless and I would heal all your wounds? I want to heal your wounds for the rest of your life, and I would like to spend more time together after all of this.
Basically, yeah.
Yeah. And it's just like, oh, God. And then you already know what happens to her when you're watching this scene, and you're just like, oh, F. Like,
I'm not going to lie. I'm Team Mipha over Team Zelda. I'm one of those guys.
I swear, after Tears of the Kingdom, like, I mean, I felt it at the end of Breath of the Wild, but after Tears of the Kingdom, I'm Team Zelda with, like, shipping all the way, as far as, like, it might even be more so than I ship Skyward Sword Zelda with Link. I feel like these two belong together, so.
Well, let's not talk about Skyward Sword Zelda yet, although we will.
Yeah. Oh, I got a few of those, too. I'm sure we have the same two exact ones, I'm sure.
Probably, okay, what are we on? We're on number 5. Okay.
Let's do...
Five Alive.
I'm going to do... Okay, so like Sorry. I said, there's a pattern. There's a pattern. So Midna's farewell is, like, really emotional because... Oh, okay,
come on.
Yes, Twilight Princess isn't the greatest, like, funnest game for me personally to play, but I feel like the story is pretty good, and I love Midna's growth as a character, and she makes a similar sacrifice that... Not quite on Zelda's level, but she clearly, like, has a very strong connection with Link, and Link back with her, and she turns back into her rightful form. Xant is gone, but Midna knows that there is power in the Twilight Realm that could cause harm to both of their realms in the future again. So what she does is she breaks the mirror so that nothing could transpire between the two realms ever again, which in essence sacrifices her and Link being able to see each other or be around each other or have their continue their connection in the future. It just separates them irrevocably. And I feel like it's a really sad moment, especially when Midna does it with her own tear and Link sees exactly what's about to happen and he can't stop it. So I just feel like it's a really strong moment for both of those characters. It's a very good culmination of their whole entire adventure together. And I got a little teared up when it happened. I was like, oh no, they'll never see each other again. You know?
Oh, you're so soft. So soft.
I really have a thing about where I connect to these companions and then they leave me. It's I might have abandonment issues in Zelda. So.
I'm not a big fan of Midna, so this moment didn't quite hit for me. But there is a moment here that I'll give a shout out to you, because if I don't do it here, I'll probably never do it again in my life. But like, I do love like when Midna finally turns into like her true self and not like Imp Midna. Mm-hmm. I like that she still talks like Imp Midna.
Herself. Yeah,
because like I think like you see this kind of regal princess looking character, and you're waiting for her to be prim and proper and stuff like that. And I think her line is like, what are you looking at? Or like, not what you expected, or something along those lines.
My too beautiful for you to speak, something like
that. Yeah, exactly. Something like that. So I was like, okay, at least it's like true to character. I like that.
Yeah.
Okay, we're on number 5, right? Okay, so it's my turn. I have a moment from a game that doesn't get a lot of love, but I picked the moment from A Link Between Worlds. At the ending of the game, when Ravio is desperately trying to convince Hilda that what she is doing is wrong. Mm-hmm. And I think this is such a fantastic story, actually, in A Link Between Worlds. And I think Hilda, specifically, is such a great character. The type of character that you don't get very often in Zelda. Almost, like, at all, actually. Where, like, she is a villain in one sense. But, like, she's desperately trying to help her world. But, at the cost of another world. It's funny, actually. Sam and I watched Man of Steel last night. She's almost like General Zod in a way. Not quite as extreme, but like Zod was willing to completely like let Earth die in order to let Krypton live. And it's not like a ridiculous comparison to say the same about Hilda and Lorule and Hyrule. And like there's just this moment where like this pathetic like character, Ravio, who's like the antithesis of what Link is. He's not courageous. He's nothing. And he's just like pleading and begging. And he's just like, you got to stop. And it's such a great moment. I can't remember specifically what he says, but like he is the one that finally convinces Hilda that like this is wrong. And it's a great moment. I don't even know if I'd say it's a sad moment. Most of my moments are sad, but like this one is just like kind of a saving someone before they've gone too far. And you could argue that Hilda already did go too far, but yeah, it's just a great moment.
I love it. I agree. That's a great moment. I would say on a continuation of that is when Zelda wishes on the Triforce that Laurel will have their Triforce back, and Hilda sees it, and Hilda and Ravio see it together. And I feel like that's such a strong moment for both of them too, is when I think that's Zelda forgiving Hilda, and Hilda is like coming back to the light that Ravio wanted her to be, you know? So like equally both moments are pretty strong. So I didn't even think about those either. Dang, that's a good one.
Notice how you've been really supportive of mine and I've kind of dumped on a couple of yours here.
Well, like I would agree that your moments have had emotion for me too, aside from the one in A Link to the Past.
Okay, well, let's go on to number 4. What say you?
Okay. Are you ready? It's another companion, but I feel like we both have this companion on our list. I just don't know where it is on yours. Fi's farewell.
It's a little bit higher on mine.
Okay.
It's a
little bit... Should we wait to talk about it?
Yeah, let's wait till we get there. Let's wait till we get there. Okay. We're not far.
Okay.
Okay, so number 4 on my list is from Majora's Mask, and it is Pamela reuniting with her father, who has transformed into a Gibdo, and you got to play the music box. You're in Kanna Valley, or a canyon rather, and like it's just this desolate land, and like there's Gibdos and Rededs everywhere. It's a horrible place to live. I don't know why they're there. The only house that you can see. And her dad is turned into this Gibdo, and like you gotta work your way into the house to get there. And eventually, when you finally do get in, you see this monstrous form that is, you know, she's desperately trying to figure out how to heal, and she's just like a kid, and you're just like, oh my god, this is horrible. And you play the song of healing, and you just get this happy like ending, which is, you know, If this doesn't make you feel something and pull at your heartstrings, like you need to check your pulse, because it's like this is so it's so sad but heartwarming, and yeah, it's such a great moment from Majora's Mask. Mm-hmm.
I considered this moment for my list as well, but there's just like so many of those moments where you help heal people, and that I was just like, I can't particularly choose one of them. Like I said, I would have to make my own Majora's Mask list. But yeah, it's such a heartwarming, and I love that how much Pamela takes care of her father too. Like, she locks him in a closet, but like at the same time, that's her way of protecting him so that nobody sees him, but also so he doesn't hurt anybody. And so I feel like she's really grown up in this moment. Not only is she just missing her dad, but she's taking care of him until help arrives, you know? Mm-hmm. So that just makes it like a double-edged sword of sadness.
Yeah, I agree. Okay, number three.
Okay. Yeah.
Let me ask you a question. Do you want to talk about your number four and my number three?
Yeah, let's talk about my number four and your number three.
And then we'll talk about your number three. Okay. So my obviously number three, your number four, Fi's Farewell.
Mm-hmm.
This moment, man. Oh my God. This is, I don't even know if I'd say she's my favorite companion, but like, there's something about the way that like this moment shapes up, and like the music, I mean, you can't overstate how important the music is to this. It's one of the best tracks in the entire series. It's such a beautiful, like beautiful, rendition of Fi's theme. The words that she said, like, I think it's that one line, right, that everybody mm-hmm. remembers, like, may we meet again in another life. It's just so, actually, it's not even that, like, that's like the killer line, but like the other line where she's just like, you know, many people have said these words to you, and now I wish to say them for myself. And she says, thank you. Like, oh my God. Like, I was mm-hmm. just like, oh, like it was such a fan. And then like for her to go and sleep in the Master Sword for forever. And like, you know, we were talking about, you kind of hear this theme playing in Tears of the Kingdom. You hear like the little Fi sounds, sometimes when you hear the Master Sword. Like, this is just such a amazing, amazing scene to me that really elevated my connection with Fi. And I know some people are just like, you know, this moment is a little bit unearned and blah 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 blah, but mm-hmm. I didn't think so. I thought that like you could slow, like, I mean, Fi is a machine basically, like she's like a program. Mm-hmm. And so like you weren't gonna get that gradual like turn, but I think like once your mission was complete, you could finally see like the real Fi behind there. So it's such a good scene.
Yeah, I mean, Fi is programmed just like Ghirahim is programmed. And so the fact that they could both feel emotions, like that moment where Ghirahim does feel hurt by Demise's dismissal, but also in that end with Fi saying, like, I can equate this feeling to being happy, you know, that she actually felt an emotion with Link, and that she knows that she will continue to be by the hero side. And I think the fact that we got to experience other games with the Master Sword really adds weight to how she says maybe meet in another lifetime, or the fact that you know she's always with you when you have the Master Sword, especially in Breath of the Wild and Tears of the Kingdom, where they confirm that she's there, that she talks to Link and she talks to Zelda mostly, but that Link can hear her as well. It's just, it adds so much weight to that moment. Like, sure, the moment itself doesn't feel earned, but it does feel earned when you put the whole series in that moment. So, and then, like, the music is incredible. I feel like a lot of my moments where things happen is because you can see Link's emotion as well. He's very, like stoic and, like, stone-faced for the majority of games. But when you see him, like, carry emotion as well, I think that's why a lot of these scenes have more weight at the top of my list. And that's one of those moments where he's like, what's going on? Why aren't you with me anymore? Oh, you're staying in the Master Sword? That makes me sad, you know?
Yeah.
So it's a very deep connected moment to the embodiment of the Master Sword.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. Fantastic moment. Okay, you're number three. That was my number three. What's yours?
My number three could also be listed to my like triumphant list. But I like got teary-eyed, so it was super emotional for me. But I also have a childhood memory attached to it. So this is huge spoilers for Tears of the Kingdom. I'm going to throw that out there in case anybody hasn't beat the game yet. This is huge spoilers for Tears of the Kingdom. But Zelda gets turned back to herself from being a dragon, and Link wakes up and realizes that they're falling and plummeting to the earth. And he turns and realizes that Zelda is there, and he's like, gotta catch her. And it's a throwback to the beginning of the game where he couldn't catch her, so he's desperately, like, diving through the sky to reach her. And I feel like Sailor Moon fans are going to understand me, but everybody else is going to be like, what the heck are you talking about? But there's a scene in Sailor Moon where Usagi is chasing her daughter through the sky. Very similarly, her daughter is unconscious and Usagi is falling to basically her death, risking life to save her daughter. And so it was a callback for me. I felt a lot of emotion to it. And when he finally catches her hand, what he couldn't do at the beginning of the game, I was like, I was cheering, I was crying, I was like, oh my god, I can't believe this is happening. What an end to a Zelda game. So that is definitely my number three most emotional moment, where it's like, there was a lot of weight in that moment for me.
Yes, I like that moment too, and I especially like how they bookend it with the beginning of the game.
Exactly.
Where you can't get her, and now you finally can.
Mm-hmm.
I think it's... I love that scene. I think I'm still wrestling with the other side of that too, where
right.
it's like, I think that's a great scene, like in that moment. I kind of just like, does it make everything else that kind of came before seem a little bit cheaper? I don't know. I'm still figuring out how I feel about that. Mm-hmm. So I love that moment, and I guess like because we're talking about moments, that would fit the bill nicely. I don't know if I'm ready to say that. That's kind of why I didn't have anything Tears of the Kingdom on my list. Not because there's not these great moments in the game, there is. Just because I feel like I'm still processing how I feel about the story and everything.
Mm-hmm.
But it is a great moment. You're right.
Yeah, I think that because her sacrifice doesn't have any, well, quote unquote, doesn't have any weight because she turns back, does kind of hamper the whole story of the game. But I feel like to be able to get that moment where he is able to catch her, we had to have that. So I mean, obviously you can't catch her as a dragon, but like,
yeah.
I don't know, that having that moment made it okay for me that there wasn't the end result of Zelda's sacrifice where she stays a dragon. It made that moment okay for me.
If they would have just done something a little bit different with the story and made up some cockamamie reason why.
Yeah, she changes back.
Yeah, I think yeah, it would hit a lot more hard for me because it is a great moment.
Yeah, I'm sure we'll talk about that more on the Champions cast, like in a full episode.
Ha! You did it!
I did the shilling, I know.
No, you did the Champions cast, not the Zelda cast.
Oh no! The Zelda cast! I was like, oh yay, I'm shilling my candy.
I still can't believe that. I don't think I've ever slipped up on the show.
Not once, huh?
No.
I don't think so either, but oh well, I do it every once in a while.
Every once in a while. That kind of brings a little bit of nostalgia to my heart, actually.
Nostalgia, the retro Zelda cast.
Yeah, that's right. Okay, well, moment number two. I believe it is still your turn, Al, so take it away.
Okay, moment number two is, I think our number one is the same.
Let me ask you this. Is your number two from Skyward Sword?
My number two is from Tears of the Kingdom.
Perfect.
My number one is from Skyward Sword.
Yeah, okay. Let's go.
I love that it's the same for both of us. But, okay, Tears of the Kingdom. I was bawling like a baby. Even though I could see it coming a mile away, this scene where Zelda becomes a dragon is so heavy. Like, you can see the weight of time and space and Hyrule and everything on Zelda's shoulders, where she pulls off her secret stone and she's like, I must do this. Like, she's like even gearing herself. She's like, you must do this. You have to. And she sacrifices her very soul, basically, to become an immortal dragon in order to give Link the chance he needs to defeat Ganondorf. And it just, like, it holds so much weight. The music is incredible. I'm getting all emotional just talking about it. As the sages look on too in despair because they're like, she's doing this, it doesn't even work. You know, the weight of Rauru's faith is on her too. Like, because Rauru gave her, he said, I know you're here for a reason. And obviously this was the reason. So it's just like, there's so much weight on that decision, her master plan to help Link defeat Ganondorf so many years in the future. It's like, it was a big moment for me. And it's what makes Tears of the Kingdom's story so great in the entirety of the series.
I think I would say everything I said about the last entry and apply it to this. Mm-hmm. I think it's a fantastic moment. It mm-hmm. absolutely is. Still wrestling with how I feel about the ending, because I think the ending undercuts both moments for me personally. But okay. like if they would have like if she would have stayed like that, this might be like the best moment in the entire series.
Like mm-hmm. I think that's fair.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So yeah, it's a great pick. I like that pick. I don't know. It'd be interesting to like revisit this in like a year once I've had, because we're only like a couple weeks from beating it. So I want to see how it settles and how it mm-hmm. feels and whatever. This is a moment that's settled for me for the last 25 years. This is from Ocarina of Time. And it's a very, very quick moment. But when you beat the Forest Temple and you get the medallion of Forest from Seria, and there's this white light that appears across the screen, and the entire screen is white, and it says, like, Seria will always be ... your friend. And it hits me so hard, because it's like that one sentence just brings to my mind like all the things that Link and Seria will never be able to have, because they're like they're destined to be these heroes. It's like mm-hmm. it's like I don't know if they were going to be like friends forever, or maybe they were going to be something more than friends, or I don't even know if that's a thing with the Kokiri, but like clearly there is a big affection there. Clearly there is a bond, and they're never going to get to, you know, they're never going to get to be able to like to act on that, because like she is now not of this world, and Link's destiny is pulling him away from this friend. And so it's just like, man, this it's another example of like what could have been, maybe what should have been if things were different. So mm-hmm. yeah, that's a moment that like I remember it hitting me the first time I ever saw it, and it still does. It's a sad moment, because I'm just like, it's like, man, these guys, like, you know, destiny was not kind to them, like, because mm-hmm. you know, we often forget that, like, in you know, these people that are destined to do great things do have to maybe give up something along the way. Mm-hmm. So that's a great, I really like that moment. It's a small moment, but mm-hmm. sticks out to me.
Yeah, that's a good one. I wouldn't say it held so much emotional weight that it would make it on my list, but I do catch those feelings where it's like, dang, yeah, their destiny really separated them. And especially when you consider that Sario was like really Link's only friend. Everybody else kind of outcasted him because he didn't have a fairy, but Sario was there by his side the whole time from day one. And so, and it's kind of funny because Ocarina of Time does have a story, but it doesn't have like, you know, the character development that we're used to nowadays. Like they did what they could for the time, and but it still holds a lot of weight with these characters and like gaining connections and feelings with these characters, especially with Saria. So it is a heavy moment where you're kind of like, oh, that's really sweet and sad. Like, it's just sad because, you know, they can talk almost telepathically, but not to any extent mm-hmm. where they really get to spend that connection together.
Yeah, like things will never be the same, and that's kind of the sad part, I think. Mm-hmm. Okay, let's talk about number one. Let's confirm that we made our list separately. We did not confer, by the way, but number one was an easy pick for me.
Yeah,
I will never forget watching this moment in the series, and this is from The Legend of Zelda Skyward Sword. And this is where Zelda sacrifices herself to, she basically puts herself to sleep in this crystal for like, I don't know, thousands of years. And I think that this one works for me, while the other ones don't, because there is a logical reason why she comes out, and there is like a storyline reason, but there's one line, there's one word actually that sells the whole thing for me, where, you know, she's kind of in this state of flux where she is Zelda, but she is also Hylia, this goddess reborn. Mm-hmm. And so like there are times where she's talking like the Zelda that you know throughout the course of the game, and there's times where she's talking like this goddess who is not of this world, and she's kind of starting to talk a little bit more like that, a little bit more, and then there's this one line that she says where it's like this time you gotta wake me up, sleepyhead, or something like that, and it was mm-hmm. like, I was like, oh my god. And I remember sitting on my couch, the year's 2011, I have one of my buddies over, he's just kind of watching me play Zelda, I look over to him, He's doing kind of this thing. He's like, he's like rubbing his nose a little bit. I'm doing the same thing. I was like, oh my god, like us, I had something spicy. Like, what's going on? And both of us were just like, oh my. And like this moment is just so
awesome. The music that plays is awesome. The the scene, the words, the messaging, like it's amazing. It's an amazing moment.
I do. I agree. This is my number one moment too. And it's like I said before, it's because Link has a lot of emotional weight and connection to it as well. And like, you're able to feel it through him. You literally see his anguished face as she encases herself in crystal. And I feel like that really weighs more than if it was just, you know, Zelda speaking to him, like, and him having that stoic face as he usually does. But Skyward Sword Link is pretty expressive. But I think what also makes it heavy is that she is speaking out of responsibility as Hylia. You know, she basically says, yeah, I used you. I apologize for that, but it was necessary. I used you and I groomed you for this role that you're playing, just as I did Zelda. And, but you can tell that Zelda is still in there and she regrets having to say that. You can feel the emotion from the words that she's saying, that she doesn't really like admitting this as Hylia, like, as Zelda, Link's friend. You know what I mean? So yeah. I feel like that even, that makes it emotional, where I'm like, geez, this like is really heavy and really deep, because like, she has this friendship, but she also has a duty that she has to perform. And he hopes that Link will understand. And of course he does, but like, he also loses her in that moment in a way, even though it's a split second for him, it's still a life, like a bazillion lifetimes for her. So it's just so heavy and so sad, and like, Link's face just gets me every time
when he trips, runs up the stairs.
God, it's like, pulls at my heartstring, rips it out, stomps it on the ground.
best scene in the series, I think. Like, it's so good. I watch it on YouTube sometimes when I'm feeling like mopey and whatever. I put on some Adele. I open up this scene and I'm just like,
I love it.
Yeah, it's an awesome scene. Okay, so we've got our top 10 most emotional moments in the series here. Let's have some fun. This was a quick bonus. I suggested this as a joke actually, but by God,
this will be quick.
We got Liz. Yeah, we can do this rapid fire. Like, so let's go.
I don't know if I can even rank these, to be honest. Like, some are, well, maybe. Some are uglier than others.
I ranked them, but I was just like, whatever. Like, 1-10. As I remembered, I was like, yeah, you could go here. You can go in 6. You can go in 7. So, okay let's go. I'll take the lead on this one, if I may.
Go for it.
Okay, the top 10 ugliest Twilight Princess characters. The world has been waiting for this list for years, and now we are finally here to deliver. So let's get started with number 10, Ashay. Ashay? Is that how you say her name? Now, hold on. I think she actually looks pretty cool. Like, most of all, like, she's got a cool outfit going on. She's got cool armor. She's got cool everything. Except they just couldn't help themselves. They put something stupid on her, which is this insane, ridiculous tuft of hair on her forehead, which is
her bangs.
She's got like this bang, and it's like going to, it's like this triangle that connects to her hairline. It's like, what the hell is that?
She gave herself a TikTok haircut.
This character looks pretty cool, and they were just like, you know, it would make her look even better. This weird hairy triangle on her forehead, like.
God. I totally just, she's not even on my list. Like, I think Ashay's cool. She's like, she's so, like, I don't know, calm,
deadpan. She is cool. That's the problem.
Calm in the face of, you know, like,
all you can look at is that stupid thing on her forehead.
I did not even pay attention to that until you brought it up.
All right. Who you got?
Okay, let me see. Like I said, I don't think I really rank this very well, but one of the people in Hyrule Town, he's kind of funky looking. His name is Carlo or Charlo, and I think he's the one who's asking for donations in Hyrule Town, and you can give him money. But he's got these, like, giant earrings, he's got this weird, like, cone-shaped head, he got this funky little eyebrow thing going on, long nose. I'm a horrible person for
Carlo
saying
Twilight Princess. let's be clear, by the way, these guys are probably all pretty cool guys. It's not their fault they were designed the way they were. It's not their fault that they were going for a Tim Burton style.
I honestly do look at this and I'm like, why did Nintendo create some of these characters looking this way? Like, funky.
You know what? I just Googled Carlo. I forgot about this guy. I kind of dig this guy's weird, like, he's got this weird head. It's like, what the hell is this thing? It looks looks great. Okay, next on my list, how do you say these guys' names? Uko Jr. and his ugly dad.
Those would have been my number one and number two, actually.
Are they? Okay. You know what? Let's just read my list. You can chime in on when you want to. And if we missed any, we'll just talk about them. These things are just awful. Like, what?
They are nightmare fuel.
This is, like, just horrible. Especially the kid, because it's just a head. It looks just demented.
Like a flying head.
Yeah.
I feel like these would be number one on anybody's list.
No, there's a different number one. And, like, I think the idea of, like, a Kuko human hybrid actually sounds kind of cool, but they look actually, like, just horrifying. So
that sentence, I can't believe you just said that sentence.
Well, I don't know. I'm trying to give some credit to this game because I don't know what the hell they were thinking here. Let's go to number eight. Number eight is Deranged Murderer Postman, who is like this creepy skeletal figure that you're kind of waiting for him to pull like a Men in Black and like completely his limbs like can disjoint and go backwards and stuff, and he starts like crawling on his legs with his belly in the air and he's got his hands down, and eventually like some monster comes out of his stomach, and like that's the real postman, because this whatever this thing is clearly a shell for some kind of monster hiding inside of him, because he looks
that's horrible.
Absolutely,
he's just doing his job.
Well,
I have him on my list too, but
there's one scene too where you're in Zora's domain and you see this little creep and he's just like hiding behind the like the throne at the very top of Zora's domain, and I walked over and I was like, yeah, Jesus, that's the postman. Oh, so yeah, this guy,
is he there? I don't remember that at all.
Oh, I don't know. He's just hanging out. It's just like, why is he anyway? He's just a creepy little guy.
Oh my god.
Okay, let's keep going here. Number seven, we've got Mr. Stretched Head Russell. And Russell, as you might remember, might not be a contender on most people's lists for ugly characters. But I will contend that his head is really kind of what does the trick for me. Whereas if you look at his head, there's something not right about it. It looks like, you know, in MS Paint, when you can like highlight something and stretch it upwards and like it kind of looks funky after, but like it's really tall. This is what happened to Russell's head.
Okay.
Somebody was just like, Russell's head isn't long enough, and they just grabbed it and stretched it upward. Much like Mario in Mario 64, where you could just grab his cheeks and make it some weird shape. This is what happened to Russell. Russell is a victim of that. So, yeah, weird head Russell is elongated head Russell is number seven on my list.
Okay. I don't have Russell on my list at all because I think he looks very normal compared to most characters in this game.
Okay. Well, let's keep it going here. And unfortunately, not even the animals are safe in Twilight Princess. The animals are also fairly ugly. So we have got Trill the Bird Who Yells at You. And I will say, well, he has this like ginormous lump on the top of his head that looks super weird. Most of his ugliness comes from the fact that this bird is just all over you every time that you're around him. And he's like, pay, give me rupees. And it's like, no, I just want to steal from you. Okay, first of all. And second of all, like, what is up with that thing on your head? I've never seen a bird with a thing on its head like that. I don't know if it's an afro. I don't know if it's supposed to be hair, if it's supposed to be feathers, or like what the hell it is.
He prunes it so that when it's like mating season, so he's got to have the best fro for all the other female birds.
Well, I guess so. It looks pretty weird. Okay, my next entry on this list. You know, I was talking about when people, in MS Paint, they make something like longer or bigger than it is. Well, this is what happens when you do the opposite and you have something and you take the top of it and you just scrunch it downwards. And that's how you end up with Egg Shape Mallow, who is this creepy, round little kid who, does he blink? I don't know. But he looks.
Does he blink?
He looks strange. He looks very short. He's a greedy guy, too. As we all know, he ends up opening up the Mallow Mart. He's probably going to be a billionaire, which also makes him creepy. But, yeah, just Mallow, there's something not quite right about this kid.
There's something not quite right. He's not on my list either. My list is completely different from yours, but there's something not right about this kid because he's basically a baby, but he's so he's a genius baby, which makes it a little scary. He makes rude comments and at the beginning of the game, and then he opens this business franchise, and it's just so odd. He's a baby.
It's very, very weird. He belongs in some kind of horror movie somewhere for sure. Is like this, he's almost got that Chucky thing going on, or some kind of equivalent there. So yeah, there's something definitely not right about this kid. But I would say this, Al. So we're at number five on my list right now. I would say number four and on are when things get really ugly, really weird. So I have to imagine that some of these guys are on your list as well. So let's go. Number four, we've got the gold man, Giovanni. I don't know what's up with this guy, but he's got a gold body. He's got this weird bra with rupees covering his man breasts. He's got this ridiculous haircut, and he's just sitting down. It looks like if you were to look at his character model right now in Zelda Dungeons Wiki, it looks like he's sitting on a toilet, which is strange as well. And maybe he is, by the way, because his gimmick is that he's so rich, he's amassed all this wealth that it's transformed him. But he's very odd, very creepy, very ugly. Mm-hmm. Unfortunately,
I can't remember exactly, but he's so greedy that he turned to gold. His cat turned to gold on his head. That's and right. You have to go find Poe's to release him. And it makes you wonder, are these Poe's of his victims, of his greed?
And he's got rupees for eyes, which actually is kind of awesome. But the other thing, he's got rupees all in his pants. So he has a belt made of rupees, but they're in his pants. So it's very strange.
Yeah.
So yeah, he is number four on the list. Surely this guy was on your list.
No, I didn't actually have him on my list.
Oh my god. Okay. Well, you have to have this next one on your list. This is number three. We've got Blockhead Jaggle, whose head is literally a block. It is what's the word when you have a perfect block? Not perpendicular. I'm struggling to think of what it is.
Parallelogram?
Because
all the sides are parallel?
Yeah. I don't know, but he's got some kind of Pythagorean theory going on with his head.
God.
It is a block. We suddenly
turned into a math class.
It's like when someone takes paint and then they get the corner instead of doing the top or the bottom, because this guy's head is a block. The rest of his body, he looks like he belongs in Minecraft. And his actual face, he has this weird grimace on his face all the time where it looks like he has to go to the bathroom. And he's got this weird chest hair tattoo thing going on. He's just a horrid looking character, which is no doubt, or no wonder, by the way, that he gave birth to that walking baby, Mallow. So I feel like that explains a lot. He's on my list. Where did he rank on your list?
Pretty high. He was number four.
Okay. Is there any characters let's do number two and then we'll round up the rest of your list and then go into number one.
Okay.
So number two is the cannon guy, Fire. Is that how you say it, Fire?
Yeah, I got Fire on my list.
Now this guy, you see, this guy is actually so ugly that he's almost awesome in a way, because he's just
that's a good way to put it.
it's such a ridiculous character design. He looks like a clown. He's just got this huge bella sticking out, and it's not flattering at all. He's got this it almost looks like Link's tunic, and he's got a bullet bill on his coat.
On his sleeve? I've never noticed that before.
He's so ugly, but he's just embraced it so much that I almost kind of like it, where it's just you know what, dude? okay. Like, yeah.
But he's also kind of, he's like, when you actually talk to him and stuff, he's so like chill. He just like doesn't care about, and then you ask him to help you with the cannon. He's like, all right. And he helps you make this cannon and, or he'll shoot you off into the sky or whatever. He doesn't like care. And I think that's like, that's that what makes him cool. Like, yeah, he's ugly, but he's like cool with it.
Yeah, so this guy is unfortunately one of yeah, well, it's a character design. Let's just put it that way. So so yeah, that's number two on my list. I'm sure you know my number one. So let's just round up the rest of your list. See if there's anybody that we've skipped over.
Okay, I feel like your number one is because you just don't like her. But all right, here's my list. I had Carlo as number 10. I had, I feel bad for the people of like Ordon because a lot of them just don't look great and they're just such brief characters. And it's just kind of funny. Like, why Nintendo? Why did you make this like very family place so ugly? Mm-hmm. So I
noticed it's kind that of too. It's a lot of the Ordon characters,
like the hometown people. Maybe that's a bad implication, but these are interchangeable. They don't have to be in any particular order. But I put like Purgy, Sarah, Fado, or not Fado, Haunch. They're all just like, I don't know, just kind of scrunchy, scrappy characters that you don't really pay a lot of attention to, and they just live in or Ordon Village. But they have a bunch of cute kids, so it's fine. And those are all kind of interchangeable characters. They don't have to be in any particular order. I also had Fire, and then I had his brother, Falby.
Let me look at this
who
guy.
He does the cuckoo thing up top of like Hylia. And so his getup is just even, I think he's uglier than Fire.
I think he's more scary. Like he's to me seems scary. Like I mean, he's certainly ugly for sure. But there, I don't know. There was something about the crazy look in his eyes. I was like, I'm not gonna put him on my list in case he hears this.
Okay. and then I had the postman and the Ugo Jr. and Ugo Sr. And that's all I had. I didn't really particularly pay attention to the creatures or anything, and I definitely didn't put who you're about to say on my list because it's fine. She just is a horrible character.
Well, that's right. Number one on my list of ugliest characters in Twilight Princess is Illya.
Saw that coming from a mile away.
because, listen, ugliness, we could talk about character design. That's fine. You know, some of them are they're kind of ugly, but we say that tongue in cheek, having fun. These are fine characters; they're designed to be that way. That's fine. But this character, Illya, she is ugly for who she is, not what she looks like. Illya, all she does this whole game is bitch you out for not taking care of Epona. When all you do is take care of Epona in this game, she is like the most meaningless quests in this game that take forever to go get done. There's no payoff to her story. Terrible character. Ugliest character in the game.
All right.
That's ugliest fair. Character in Twilight Princess. Maybe the ugliest character in the series. Illya is the worst. she really is just like the worst.
I mean, that's fair. I don't really care for Illya much either. It's I feel like they were trying to go in a direction with Illya that didn't come over well with people. I don't think a lot of people really like her, so.
Like, why are you trying to shoehorn in this uncharismatic, negative character with zero chemistry with Link when you already have Midna, you already have Zelda, you, even Agatha has more chemistry. Like, there's so many other better characters in this game that you could have explored as a potential love interest, and you choose Illya, who is completely irrelevant by like the halfway point of the game. Like, nobody cares about Illya. Like, get her out, just cut her out of this game. And she's involved in that horrendous cutscene where her eyes are all away and she's holding up a knife, and it's like, that's not her fault. Well, you know what, you're right, but she's still there, by god. Yeah. So yeah, Ilya's the she's the ugliest character in this game, maybe in this series. So there you go. Okay. Well, so there we go. That was our maiden episode of ZeldaCast Top 10s over on Patreon. So what we're going to do is I'm going to think of a few different options for our next top 10 list. I'm going to throw them on Patreon. And I think we're going to stick with this format. This could change. I don't know. We'll see how it goes. But I think we're going to do like one top 10 list that's kind of like, you know, a meatier one. And then we'll have another fun one at the end. Or maybe it'll be too meaty. But I don't know. We'll figure it out as we go along. But yeah, for a first episode, kind of getting our feet wet into this whole Patreon thing, I think this went pretty well, Al.
Yeah, I had a lot of fun. I love talking like emotional weight and then like leaving off on a kind of funny moment.
There you go. Okay.
Good content.
what a pairing. The most emotional moments of the series and the ugliest Twilight Princess characters.
I love
it. There you go. Okay, well, once again, we want to thank everybody for supporting us on Patreon. It means a lot, whether you're at the Legend tier, whether you're at the Ultra tier, whether you're at the Moblin tier, like anything. Whether you're just sharing our stuff online and you're not available to help us out on Patreon, that's totally cool. Yeah, we just want to thank everybody for supporting us. It means a lot. So, that being said, I think that's it. I think we're about to ready to jam out of here. Everybody listening, I'm sure you know where we are. I'm sure you know where you can check us out. Thank you once again for supporting us on Patreon. Tell a friend. If you like this episode, tell a friend. If you know anyone that digs a Zelda cast, if you know anyone that just likes Zelda in general, tell them about this bonus show where they can come and check us out doing these top 10s every month. Okay. Well, Allison, I guess until we meet again in Chicago in 2 weeks. Not in another life, yep. But 2 weeks. So there we go. Mm-hmm. I will see you, my friend. And thank you once again to everybody listening. And we are out of here. But we will see you back here next month for another Zelda Cast Top 10s. Till then, everybody, take care.